This is CS50 Live. Now, you may recall just a few weeks ago, GitLab, a popular website for hosting people's source code, suffered a bit of an error whereby they deleted a whole lot of data from their customers. And it turns out just a few weeks later did another company, DigitalOcean, this one a cloud hosting provider whereby you can host your websites on them in the cloud, also made a bit of a mistake. Indeed, they reported this. On April 5th, 2017, we began to receive alerts that our public services were not functioning. They went on to say, within 3 minutes of the initial alerts, we discovered that our primary database had been deleted. The root cause of this incident, they later said, was an engineering-driven configuration error. They went on, a process performing automated testing was misconfigured using production credentials. Now, for more on this and to explain this failure, let's go to CS50's own Doug Lloyd.
An engineering-driven configuration. No, somebody screwed up. Somebody typed the wrong thing, and they screwed up. Back to you, David.
If you'd like to dive in deeper to this particular error, head to this URL here. Now, speaking of failures, also in the news of late was Cloudflare, this time a cloud-based company that provides content delivery network services, or CDN services. It turns out that this company, which many other websites use in order to serve up their data, static data in particular, HTML and the like, had a bit of a bug whereby they were accidentally leaking some customers' data in other customers' websites. In particular, in some cases, which to be fair were rare, but common enough that researchers at Google and beyond saw this, if certain web pages had HTML like this, where the tag was not fully closed as they're at write, what would happen is a so-called buffer overflow, whereby data actually leaked out of their servers to the wrong customers. So for instance, if a customer was very deliberately pulling up this music website here, they might actually see, maybe later in the website or somewhere else in its source code, text, or specifically HTTP headers and other data belonging to other customers. Now, who might those customers be? Well, if I'm visiting this music-based website, I might actually be seeing data from other customers who have accounts on Uber or OkCupid or Fitbit or others, which is to say, even if I don't have an OkCupid account or Fitbit or an Uber account, I might be seeing someone else's data who actually does. So suffice it to say, this is bad, but its origins could be traced to a very specific line of code. In fact, in C, on the servers that Cloudflare were running, were these lines here. And notice the check of two pointers, P and PE, for equality, the result of which was this. Because of that overflow error, it's possible that PE could sometimes be smaller than P. And so simply by checking only for equals equals was the problem ultimately resulting. And so had the check been done using greater than or equals to instead of just equal equal to, jumping over the buffer end would have been caught. A simple fix and a relatively simple problem with massive implications for customers' privacy. Now, in other even scarier news, is in Brazil, whereby bank robbers actually hijacked and robbed a bank that was using its web site in order to provide users with transactions and support for online banking. Unfortunately, they were not particularly secure, and these bank robbers were able to digitally take over their entire network. For more on this particular attack, let's turn to CS50's own resident security expert and only Jeopardy champion, CS50's own Doug Lloyd.
Thanks, David. As you point out, this is in fact a modern form of bank robbery. What happened in this case is that customers went to visit their bank website, or what they thought was their bank website, but actually were visiting perfectly duplicated clones created by hackers. And what these hackers were able to do was to hack into the domain name system to change where the customers thought they were going. In fact, this attack was even so secure that the hackers were able to secure SSL certificates, which create those green locks that we see in our URL bars in our browsers to indicate that a site is secure. So the customers who were visiting this bank website thought that they were accessing something secure, and they would type in their banking credentials and complete the hacker's attack. Now, to date, the bank in question has still not even been identified because those hackers were able to change the domain name system records, and the bank couldn't then even email their customers as a result.
Now, Doug, you keep mentioning domain name system records. What are these exactly?
So, David, recall that the domain name system maps commonly used URLs or that we would type into our browser bar to IP addresses. And what the hackers were able to do here was to convince the registrar of domain names in Brazil to map the bank's legitimate domain names to the hacker's IP addresses.
Now this all, Doug, sounds very sophisticated. What can little customers like me do to protect our hard-earned money in banks like this?
That's a great question, and I would recommend that everybody do what I do, which is to put all of my money under my mattress.
Thanks, Doug. Well, now here, closer to home, has been a reports of phishing. Indeed, all over campus here at Harvard are posters like this encouraging people to report phishing, the process whereby adversaries send you an email that might look legitimate, but is really some form of spam, but that generally contains links or URLs to other websites that also look legitimate, but are in fact copies of other websites, not unlike banks, whereby you can then trick users into providing you with their usernames, their passwords, thereby ultimately taking over their account. In fact, according to this very clickbaity headline, everyone is falling for this frighteningly effective Gmail scam. Now, what is this and how is it plaguing campuses like ours? Well, if you're a Gmail user, you might recall receiving emails that look like this, and if sometimes, of course, your emails contain attachments. Now, Gmail draws your attention to these attachments by providing you with a very convenient downward-facing icon that, when clicked, allows you to download that PDF. But what if an adversary, someone trying to deceive you, has sent you not an attachment, but simply an otherwise blank email that contains an image embedded in it that looks, per this rectangle, exactly like the rectangle that Gmail generates automatically for actual attachments? Moreover, what if this embedded image is really a hyperlink to some other web page that then asks me for credentials like my Gmail username and password? Now, normally this wouldn't be such a concern, because if a link like this led to a web page on some foreign server where I'm being tricked into typing in my credentials, well, Harvard or my internet service provider or ISP could simply block ultimately that website so that very few customers actually fall for that trick. Unfortunately, it turns out that the web supports what are known as data URIs, whereby this particular attack was linking not to a remote website, but URL that looks like this. And notice in particular, it starts with data colon followed by a whole bunch of text. Well, it turns out you can embed in the URL bar of a browser enough information, enough HTML, CSS, and even JavaScript to make the page that's displayed actually look like a Gmail login screen like this one here. And indeed, if you then type in unwittingly your username and perhaps even your password and hit enter, that username and password is sent to the bad guy's website, not to the actual gmail.com. Now, how does this work and how do these URIs actually function? Well, here's an example of an actual data URI. And among the compelling uses of these things is to embed images and other assets inside of web pages without having to link to secondary files that then have to be loaded typically a bit more slowly. Notice that it too begins with data colon, specifying this is a data URI or URL. Then it specifies what the type of the file is that follows. In this case, it's an image of type BMP or bitmap. And then it specifies how it's encoded, which in this case is not binary, not decimal, not even hexadecimal, but Base64, which is a base system that uses letters, both capital and lowercase, as well as numbers, as well as a couple of other characters to represent as text what might otherwise just be zeros and ones, or binary. Now, the characters that follow, while they look like purely alphabetical and syntactic characters, are actually the Base64 encoding of an image, this image here. Now let's enhance, and you might indeed see a familiar face. That is literally the file that's embedded in that data URI. And so what the bad guys did in this Gmail attack is actually embed a functioning web page that was Base64 encoded instead of it being as simple as a simple happy smiley face. Now thankfully, browsers like Chrome can help us notice when websites are legitimate. Here I'm at accounts.google.com, and it starts with HTTPS, and Chrome is telling me in green that it's secure. As a result of this attack and others like it, has Google also added functionality to Chrome so that if a user accidentally or even knowingly visits a data URI that begins with data colon, now our user's informed a little more clearly in gray that this website is not secure. And now, actually wait, this just in. I'm hearing from CS50's own Doug Lloyd that there's actually a hacking attack in progress. For more on this, let's go to our live feed of the hack in progress. And now, of course, no discussion of security of late would be complete without mention of our own CIA, or Central Intelligence Agency. Indeed, it was recently revealed by WikiLeaks.org that the CIA has been taking advantage for some time of bugs in software in order to wage attacks against owners of the hardware running that software, as well as including popular devices like Android phones, iPhones, TVs, and more. And in Vault 7, in particular, did WikiLeaks reveal the CIA hacking tools, specifically referring to such initiatives by the CIA, seemingly adorable initiatives like Wrecking Crew, Crunchy Lime Skies, Elder Piggy, Anger Quake, or McNugget, which indeed sound delightful, but when you actually read about what these code names mean, they actually refer to a systematic process for identifying bugs in software and therefore potential exploits, writing software that take advantage of those bugs so as to effectively hack into people's software and or hardware. And potentially affected are familiar tools like Skype, our own Wi-Fi networks, PDFs, antivirus software, in addition to popular devices like the very phones in our pocket. But all too close to home, frankly, was the fact that Samsung TVs seem to be the result or the victim of some of these very exploits. In fact, adorably, Weeping Angel was the code name for a project that took advantage of bugs in Samsung TV's own software, smart TV software, in order to turn on, without customers apparently knowing, those devices' microphones so that you could theoretically listen in on conversations and even record them, even while giving the appearance that the TV is off. So the user thinks the TV is off and he or she is talking, but meanwhile, that TV is actually listening. Now, you may recall it wasn't all that long ago that CS50 itself blew the lid off of another problem with Samsung smart TVs, whereby at the time, though they claimed and thought they were actually encrypting such data because these microphones are present so that you can talk to your TV and issue voice-based commands, we'll recall that that data was not actually being encrypted. Now, what is a smart TV in the first place? Well, at the end of the day, our TVs are no longer just televisions. They are actually full-fledged computers with hardware and software within. And indeed, if you have such a smart TV, whether it's Samsung or something else, you may very well have icons like these on your TV, much like a tablet or phone. And that's because you can install software on TVs today. But if you can install software, you can surely install accidentally buggy software or unknowingly exploitive software that's actually doing something it's not supposed to do. But even scarier is when our hardware has things like these things here, cameras and microphones that are supposed to be used for good and not evil, as this man here is talking to his TV and using Skype by talking into his remote control. That, in fact, is meant to be a feature. But when these things can be turned on without our control, and when they can be turned on even when we think they're off, therein lies the threat and the scare. Now, how do you know if you are among those that were affected? And indeed, if you are suspicious that the CIA is spying on you, how can you confirm as much? Well, if your Samsung TV was manufactured in 2011 or 2012, this particular attack is germane. However, to be fair, the attack requires that the CIA tiptoe into your home, presumably, plug in a USB stick with the software in order to take advantage of this bug. But if that too is a threat, consider that the software your smart TV must be running for this attack to work is either version 1011, 1012, or 1016, and there have been newer versions since. But the biggest help, perhaps, is if when you think your TV is off, you actually still see a blue LED light on in the back, it might actually be listening, and God forbid, watching you. For more on this particular attack and others, you can take a look at this URL here. That's it for CS50 Live. Thank you so much to CS50's own Ian and Andrew, Mirinda, Ramon, Scully, Dan, Arturo, Christian, and of course, CS50's own Doug Lloyd. This was CS50.